Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Uriel Bowser. I represent the District of Columbia on the Metro Board of Directors, and I'm the chairwoman of this committee, the Committee on Real Estate, the Committee on Planning, Program Development, and Real Estate. So I'm calling to order this regularly scheduled meeting, and it's 9:05, and I would like to acknowledge the quorum of the committee members with Tony Giancola, who will be voting for the federal government, Mr. Jim Dyke, who will represent the Commonwealth of Virginia, and Alvin Nichols, who will be voting for Maryland, and myself, representative for the District of Columbia. I will note for the record that Mr. Acosta has recused himself from the items on the agenda today, the amendment to the Greenbelt Joint Development Agreement. I would like to call the agenda that's before us to the attention of all the members, and I would seek a motion to approve the agenda as is presented.
So moved.
Is there a second? Mr. Giancola has moved, and Mr. Nichols has seconded. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? The ayes have it, and the agenda is set forth for us. I would also like to call to the attention of the members the minutes from our last meeting, which were circulated prior to this meeting and are before you. I will entertain a motion to accept the minutes as presented or take any changes or corrections. Any discussion? 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 Although, is there a motion? I'm sorry. Mr. Dykes moved. It's been second. Any discussion? 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 All those in favor say aye. Aye. The ayes have it, and the minutes have been approved. The chair, Mr. Dyke?
Yes,
Madam
Chair, I'd like to move the planning program development and research committee to the executive session to discuss real estate matters and assistance
of Article 10 in the board bylaws. You want me to repeat that?
Yes?
Oh. Mr. Dyke will repeat it for the recorded record.
That. A little early in the morning for me here. I move that the Plan Program Development and Real Estate Committee meet in executive session to discuss real estate matters consistent with Article 10 in the bylaws.
Mr. Dyke has made a motion related to that's in accordance with the board's policies for executive session. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Giancola has seconded. All the members in favor of the motion, is there any discussion? Motion, discussion on the motion, discussion on the motion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Are there any members dissenting? There has been a unanimous vote of the committee to move to executive session to discuss a real estate matter. So the committee will reconvene, will adjourn for now, and we will make every effort to reconvene at 9:30 to address both the information item and the action item. We're adjourned. Good morning. I'm Uriel Bowser. I represent the District of Columbia on the WMATA Board of Directors, and I'm the chairman of this committee, the Planning Program Development and Real Estate Committee. I'm reconvening the regularly scheduled meeting of the committee to consider the agenda before us. I'd like to move that the Planning Program Development and Real Estate Committee certified to the best of each member's knowledge and with no individual member dissenting that at the just concluded executive session of the Board of the Executive Committee, only such matters as are authorized for discussion in executive session under Board Bylaws, Article 10, and only those matters identified in the notice by which this session was convened were heard, discussed, or considered by the Board. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Are there any members dissenting? The motion is passed unanimously. I'd like to also recognize Jim Doherty, who will provide a CA contact.
Thank you, Chairwoman Bowser, and good morning, members of the board. First off, as we do, like to mention in the event the fire alarm or the building alarm system goes off, that we exit the building via the doors to my left or the doors behind you and assemble in front of the National Building Museum. Of course, now there's a little trailer there with us, so, but we'd still meet around the nuts and bolts to do our best to account for everyone. Our safety contact for this morning deals with heating. I know many of us would like to think winter's almost over, but from the National Fire Protection Association, there's certainly a concern about home fire deaths. In fact, half of the home heating fires reported in December, January, and are reported in December, January, and February. So if you happen to find yourself around a fireplace, reading a good book, give you some tips to remember to be warm and safe. Keep anything that can burn at least 3 feet away from heating equipment, like the fireplace, furnace, wood stove, or portable space heater. Have a 3-foot kid-free zone and keep your children or any children at least 3 feet away from any fires or heat sources or space heaters. Never use a home oven for a heating source. That's not a good idea. Have a qualified professional stationary space heating equipment, water heaters, or central heating equipment. Have your heating equipment and chimneys cleaned and inspected at least every year by a qualified professional. And always use the kind of fuel specified by the manufacturer when burning fuel. If it calls for kerosene, please don't use gasoline. Make sure that the fireplace has a sturdy screen to stop sparks from flying into the room, and ashes should be cool before putting them into a metal container. And please keep the container a safe distance away from home. And lastly, please test your smoke detectors at least monthly. That would conclude the safety contact for this morning, Chairwoman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Doherty. So the next item on the agenda is an information item, but certainly an important one. I have asked the staff to review the board's policy and discuss the roles of and responsibilities of the board in the joint development process, and in so doing, also discuss what the joint development policies and guidelines are. You will recall that we agreed, this committee with the governance committee, to have a discussion of our joint development policies and guidelines, and if there are any recommendations for changes, that they be discussed here, and if they implicate our guidelines or procedures or bylaws, that they be referred to the governance committee. So with that, I am going to turn to the staff to have a brief discussion of the existing guidelines, any comments you have on the guidelines, and after that short presentation, ask all the members to make specific comments.
Thank you, Chairman Bowser.
Thanks, Stan.
We do not have a presentation for this. We're just going to talk through some of the major components of our joint development guidelines. First, by giving the board and attendees the understanding of how we define joint development. Metro defines joint development as a creative program through which property interests owned or controlled by Metro are marketed to private developers with the objective of developing transit-oriented projects. There are several goals that we seek to achieve through this process. We've had a very active public-private joint development program since our first deal back in 1975. And we aggressively seek partners to develop Metro-owned or controlled property in order to achieve the following goals. First, promoting transit-oriented development by giving priority to joint development proposals that contain the following smart growth principles: reduce automobile dependency, increasing pedestrian bicycle-originated transit trips, fostering safe station areas, enhancing surrounding connections, including bus access, providing mixed-use development with housing in compliance with local regulations, and offering the opportunity to obtain goods and services and enjoy active public spaces near transit stations. Seek to create a source of revenue for the authority to maintain a transit system by expediently negotiating joint development agreements between Metro and our public or private development entities. We seek to attract new riders to the transit system by fostering commercial and residential development projects on Metro-owned or controlled land and on private properties adjacent to our stations. Where appropriate to the station setting, market dynamics, and local policy, we support the establishment of employment centers that are consistent with TOD principles and transit system operating and investment needs. We implement station access improvements that support pedestrian, bicycle, bus, ADA, and automobile access consistent with each station area's particular station area needs, and as determined by Metro Station Area Access Planning Program. We seek to support other transit agency goals as they arise, including the goals that have been recently articulated in our Momentum Strategic Plan, including the potential for provision of affordable housing for staff and support the recruitment of employees from outside the region. Implementation of these goals as it relates to affordable housing will be subjected to a future affordable housing policy. And finally, we seek to assist metro area jurisdictions in recapturing a portion of their past financial contributions and continue to make subsidy payments by augmenting the local tax base as well as other local revenue. So those are the goals as articulated in our current joint development guidelines for why we proceed with types of projects on our property. I'd like to walk through very, very quickly the key steps in our joint development process and how the board interacts in that process. The first step is that staff creates a list of potential sites that could be potentially offered for joint development. We conduct station access planning activities, including consulting with our relevant WMATA offices, consulting with local jurisdictions, and obtaining community input with regard to potential plans for our stations. We assess zoning and readiness for our sites, and upon completion of those activities, we seek board approval for solicitation of a particular site or sites, as well as a method of solicitation for those sites. After obtaining that approval, we issue a solicitation document. We advertise the availability of our site. We conduct a pre-proposal conference. We establish due dates and milestones within our evaluation process. And finally, we review and evaluate proposals that we might receive. We conduct an initial evaluation. We conduct a community forum to allow the community to hear what our proposed developers are offering for our projects. And we conduct a final evaluation. After that final evaluation, we select all the developer, negotiate a term sheet, and obtain an appraisal for the value of our property. Before moving forward, we then obtain board approval on that term sheet and selection of that developer. We then conduct a compact public hearing to give the public a chance to understand what the impact may be to existing transit facilities at those sites, and we obtain board approval after that compact public hearing. Finally, we negotiate a development agreement with our development partners and obtain board approval on that joint development agreement. After that last step, we then seek to an FTA approval of our development and disposition, and then we proceed to implementation of our joint development projects. So the boards actually engage very frequently throughout our process, prior to even issuing a solicitation, and throughout each step in the process of development advances through evaluation and selection. And that concludes my discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Wall. So what Mr. Wall has presented are the very specific responsibilities of the authority staff, which initiate the process and do a lot of the evaluation and work, and the very specific approvals that come to the board. So the first being, as Mr. Wall mentioned, the authorization of the solicitation at the offset, the approval of the developer selection in a non-binding term sheet based on the staff's recommendations, then the approval of the terms of a lease or sales agreement or the final contract, and the board is then also asked to authorize a public hearing. There has been some discussion about when the terms change after the board has approved a developer in an agreement. We've had some discussion about what, if anything, needs to happen then. So, Ms. O'Keefe, in your review, do we need to make any changes to the process? Let me give you an example. The board approves one developer or team, and then somewhere along the process before the development starts, that team might change. Do you see any reason for changes to the guidelines?
The guidelines themselves do not specifically address amendments to the joint development agreements, and I would agree if the implication is that they should address that. The way we decide whether or not something comes back to the board is to assess the proposed change and determine whether it's material, and I agree that that is a judgment call, and typically I make that judgment call. So if there's a change in the compensation, the duration of the agreement, change in the development team itself that might be material to the board's consideration, a change in the proposed use on the site, that's typically very important to the board in its selection and approval. So if there's a material change, that would come back to the board. But I acknowledge that that's not particularly laid out without clarity, and I agree that it should be, because it shouldn't be left to judgment of staff. So I think through the years that every material matter is brought back to the board for its consideration because of the keen interrelationship between joint development matters and jurisdictions, but it still would be best articulated and put in the joint development lines.
Okay, so Mr. Soros, we'd like to ask you to work to direct the staff to bring some proposed language to us for consideration, either to this committee or to the governance committee. We'll see what's specifically implicated. Also, Mr. Wall, I'd like to address the board's role in helping to identify the pipeline for development. In other words, you know, you will bring a certain, the staff work on certain solicitations or properties. But what is, how are we engaged in the pipeline for that development? What's on your work program for a given year?
The first step is essentially staff determines kind of which sites might be most viable based on kind of market readiness or developer inquiries or zoning readiness or adjacent development activities that are happening near our proposed sites. So that kind of like creates the initial list. We do consult with our jurisdictional kind of economic development staff, planning staff, and local officials to understand how those sites might fit into their economic development plans for their particular jurisdictions and obtain community input where necessary and then where the community is with regard to any potential development.
Importantly, we have to determine whether the agency still needs the property for its own use.
Okay. And you expect to bring a proposed list to the committee next month?
Correct.
Okay. For approval?
Correct.
Okay. So that's another way that the board will engage in the process moving forward is evaluating your recommendations for target properties for the upcoming year. I have a couple more questions, and I just want to turn. Yes, Mr. Bolger.
I was just wondering, Madam Chair, if do we actively go out and buy extra property so that we can enhance the property that LaMotta has? Are we active in the real estate?
No, we do not. We only acquire property if it's needed for transit use, not for development.
In other words, if we had a piece of property and there was another piece of property next to it, say, acres, and we had 50 or 40, we wouldn't go after the 10 to make our property or...
No, we do
no.
not.
No. Okay. All right. A second question, Madam Chair, is do we give weight to developers that are going to work with the public, a public sector institution versus a private sector institution for development purposes? Do we weight that because of the tax situation?
No, we do not.
All right. So, in other words, we would I don't know why we wouldn't. It seems to me if we did a public sector build out, they don't pay taxes.
But they pay WMATA in terms of we do receive consideration for our property.
So in other words, the jurisdictions don't do that weighting to say a private sector development project that would pay commercial real estate taxes versus a public institution that doesn't pay?
The jurisdiction might do that in their own evaluation process of potential sites they're looking for or tenants or uses they're attracting to their jurisdiction, but that's not part of our process in terms of evaluating what provides value to this agency.
But Mr. Wall, it is the stated policy that WMATA will assist local jurisdictions to recapture a portion of their past financial contributions by expanding the local property tax base. And so I think there are a number of the stated goals that we're going to ask the staff to address and bring back to us with specific policy. That may be one. A second that I know that we're going to have to address is the affordable housing policy. For example, it's our state goal that we will, what does it say? We will seek to include, support other agency goals as they may arise, including affordable housing. But the implementation of this goal has not moved forward because we don't have a stated policy. And it has been recommended in other areas that not having a stated policy can complicate your evaluation of applications. So with that, Mr. Sarles, is there have you internally worked with staff to start that process?
With respect to affordable housing, yes.
Yes.
I expect to have a memo coming forward to the board very shortly on that.
Okay. So that we would definitely seek to turn our attention to very quickly. Are there other questions? Ms. Nichols and then Ms. Hines.
Not really so much a question, but just a couple of observations. Thank you very much for the report. Just two aspects of one aspect of our question with respect to the code of conduct and how the board and the parameters in which the board operates. Just want to be clear that as transgenics come forward for the consideration of the board, that we have a firm process of identifying specifically by name and by entity all participants in the joint development process by individual and by organization, so that we as board members don't inadvertently find ourselves in positions of conflicts of interest, either intentionally or unintentionally. Well, obviously not intentionally, but I think sometimes it can be extraneous relationships that all of a sudden appear because these partnerships are made up of wide ranges of entities and individuals that may not have an obvious real estate back interest, but real estate partnerships grow in all kinds of ways. So we just wanted to talk about that and that we exercise that. The second one is with respect to, I appreciate the importance of the real estate committee, and I'm not a member of that committee, but I'm glad that the Ms. Bowser is going to go through the process with reviewing the guidelines. I think that as we look at clarifying the roles, I think it's also important that we are ensure that our process is not overly complex in terms of the burden that it puts on private interests to compete for our interests, because we want to make sure that they do get developed and move forward. We have an obligation to be very clear about what we are doing, to exercise oversight over the assets, and we must do that clearly. We have to walk a process that makes sure that we don't create an economic burden or a process burden that acts as a disincentive to private investors to participate in our process, too. So it's a fine line that you, but I just ask staff to pay particular attention to that as well in, as you review the guidelines.
The chair wishes to include some language in proposed guideline changes with regard to requiring us to give you a list of participants early in the process.
Thank you. Ms. Hines?
Thanks, Ms. Bowser. Wearing my other hat as vice chair of the governance committee, I read these guidelines with the work there in mind, and I think it's good that we're talking about adjusting. I have two specific suggestions for consideration today. The first one is that we add to paragraph to 5.1 in the guidelines, which is the section that describes the board's role, a sentence that says sort of at the end of that, at all times, individual board member involvement in specific joint development proposals shall be governed by the board's adopted code of ethics. So it just puts that straight up into this document, makes that connection very clearly. And I think that's really the only wording change I would recommend there. The other sort of connectivity piece, if you will, that I think we ought to think about is in our bylaws, we currently reference our travel policy and our code of ethics as two key documents related to our work as board members. I think this is worthy of a similar mention. You know, the section in the bylaws that says we'll maintain joint development guidelines and policies that articulate, you know, that lay out the board's involvement in this process, because it's a lot of money, it's a big money process. So those would be the two things I would put forward for people to consider today.
Madam.
Any objection? Yes, Mr.
Chairman. I don't have an objection.
That's, no, I don't think so. I think. I think from my point of view, Mr. Downey, it's a fair question. As we've been working through all this governance stuff, it seems to me that there really are some key documents that are of interest to the board. And so my mind is not on us, but on people 5 years and 7 years now. And to the extent that these key documents are linked to each other, you basically say to the governing board, these are the most important. None of them are unimportant. I totally agree.
Okay, Mr. Dyke.
With all due respect to Mort's last comment, I'd like to move that we change the the policy procedures to reflect the language that Ms. Hines put forth.
May I make a suggestion, Mr. Dutta? We note the recommendations around the table today, along with the staff recommendations, and I'll bring something to act on all at once at
the
next
fine.
Available time.
That's fine.
So we'll note Ms. Hines' comments and all the comments today.
Ms. Bowser,
yeah.
I have one other area that I think would benefit from staff review, and that's the section that is entitled Local Jurisdictions. It's 5.3 on page 6. As I read this and I thought about the fact that we are often, you know, the face for our local jurisdictions, and that some of us play appropriate dual role. We sit on our governing board, and we also sit on this board. Or we, you know, have interactions with the mayor, or we are the mayor. and I was reading this, and I thought, gosh, there could be quite a bit of confusion in this particular section about the role that the people who play on the board sit versus the role of the local jurisdictional. I think this is mostly about staff, but it's not clear. And so I would really recommend that staff take a look at that check and try to sort that out. It may be at some point in here it says the local jurisdiction identifies a point person. It may be as simple as saying the local jurisdiction identifies in writing a point person. There's no lack of clarity about who the actor is for the local jurisdiction. But I think that really needs to have a little bit more thinking. I don't know what the real fix is, but
okay.
I think there's confusion there.
Okay.
The
That's
potential.
Helpful. Thank you. Are there other comments? Let me just wrap up then by saying, generally speaking, there is a section in the guidelines 4.0 of policies of local jurisdictions affecting development. And one certainly that I'm going to ask the staff to kind of compare is our jurisdictional sunshine policies as they relate to joint development in the policies here at WMATA. For example, how are these opportunities, these solicitations made available to public? Are they widely available on our website? How, for example, and what information does the board have prior to the meetings about the joint developments that you seek our approval for, and how much of that information is publicly available, I think will be very helpful. We, for example, do this differently here than we do in my jurisdiction. That may be the case all around the table, but I do think it's helpful as we, you know, make our operations more efficient and in keeping with the expectations of the people that sent us here. I think sunshine is a vital part of that conversation. So that would be, I think, my last request is that when we discuss this again, we have some discussion of what's required in our various jurisdictions, and if we can improve on the openness of these discussions without disadvantaging our competitiveness in these deals, certainly. And the last thing I'll mention is that all the members of the board are, of course, required to complete a very extensive financial disclosure that outlines any potential conflicts, and that's in accordance with our bylaws. And I just want to make sure, Mr. Sorrells, you have a similar process on your side with high-level staff who are involved in those decisions.
That would be a regular process, as I recall. We have a regular process, as I recall, identifying staff that are in sensitive positions to make sure there's, like I thought, a lot of other people do.
Okay, and just so that you're comfortable with all of the staff who are involved in those very high-level recommendations are also held to that standard, and if you can confirm that to us, that will be helpful. Are there any other items that you would like to bring to the table on this one? All right, so we'll move on to the committee's action item, which is the amendment to the Greenbelt Joint Development Agreement. And I'm going to call on the staff to clearly outline what's before us, especially what's not before us. And what's before us is an amendment to an agreement that the board entered into some years ago, and there's a very specific request for change. Mr. Charles, is Mr. Wall going to address this for us?
Yes, but before I turn it over to him.
One quick item. Earlier this morning, Mr. Acosta said that he was going to recuse himself from any discussion or deliberation around this issue because of his oversight approval role at NCPC.
Thank you, and thanks for restating that, Mr. Downs. And Mr. Giancola will represent the federal government.
Okay. In introducing Stan, I just want to mention that the Washington Business Journal just announced that he's being honored at one of the annual Minority Business Leader Awards.
Congratulations.
That's all yours.
Thank you, Chairwoman Beiser, and thank you, Mr. Charles. The matter before the action for the PPDR committee today is an approval of an amendment to our existing joint development with the Greenbelt Metro Station. The amendment consists of two goals. First, to allow our developer to assign their existing joint development agreement from themselves to Prince George's County. The second goal is to extend the current cutoff date for the JDA to align with the evaluation and award timing for GA solicitation process for the FBI. As a quick overview of the Greenbelt site, it's approximately 78 acres, located immediately adjacent to our Greenbelt station. It's largely comprised of surface parking for Wilmot commuters. The site is bounded to the south by wetlands controlled by the state of Maryland, to the northeast by the Beltway, and to the northwest by our Green Line right away. In terms of background, first, I want to start by clarifying some of the same reports that were in the media by saying that the board did approve a joint development agreement with this developer several years ago. That agreement was most recently amended back in 2011 for the express purpose of allowing our developer to pursue the FBI coming to our Greenbelt property. That approval included a cutoff date of March 2014, because at the time they expected that the solicitation would have evolved and been awarded by that point in time. On December 3rd, 2012, GSA formally began its solicitation process for FBI by issuing a request for information, responses from the development community on exchanging the old FBI headquarters for a new consolidated headquarters. Our developer wishes to respond to the GSA solicitation with Greenbelt as their designated site. To increase flexibility for how the site might ultimately be dated to GSA, the developer is seeking WMATA approval for the Greenbelt JDA to be assigned to Prince George's County. This right of assignment is existing within the current joint development agreement. So it is not a new right that we're providing the developer. They're actually seeking their right to assign this agreement to another entity, and that's the matter that's before the committee today, is for the developer to exercise the option at their option and the county's option to assign their joint development agreement to the county. I want to stress that WMATA itself is not offering this site to the FBI. The proposed response to the FBI is by the developer and potentially the county as their partner. WMATA is supportive of developing our property across our entire system in Maryland, District of Columbia, and Virginia. We provide support and coordination to any other jurisdiction that requires our support in pursuit of their own pursuit of the FBI solicitation. And we have reached out to each of our jurisdictions to verify what support they might need as part of their process. There are three major benefits of this action for Metro. As contemplated by the preliminary plans for the Greenbelt site, a new interchange will be constructed on I-495 to increase access to the Greenbelt station, specifically to allow northbound Beltway traffic to enter the station and to allow traffic to exit the station onto the southbound Beltway. So this would...
No answer.
So, this proposed plan and kind of this act by this developer would enable us to essentially increase the access to our station in terms of the additional access that would be built in support of the FBI opportunity. The second benefit is that a major federal tenant would support the board's strategic goal of regional mobility and connecting communities. It would encourage reverse commuting by making better use of our existing metro capacity. So instead of sending mostly empty trains out the Greenbelt, we'd be sending commuters that are actually aboard the train going to that development. It will catalyze surrounding development in that the FBI itself. The plan envisions having adjacent mixed-use commercial development as part of this to create a mixed-use town for Greenbelt. And finally, it brings to Metro transit-oriented land uses and increased ridership that's been long sought at the Speaker's site. Another benefit to Metro is that it supports our additional strategic goal of ensuring financial stability and investing in our assets. This is currently surface parking. All of the parking that's currently on site will be maintained on site, replaced at no cost to Metro. It provides fair market value to Metro for acquisition of our site, regardless of whether our current developer develops a site or if they assign their rights. All of the existing obligations and consideration due Metro will pass to that eventual assignee for the property. It is staff recommendation that the board approve this amendment to allow the developer to assign the joint development agreement to Portage County and to extend the cutoff date for the joint development agreement. With that, I'll entertain any questions from the board.
Questions, Ms. Nichols?
Thank you very much for the presentation. And I mentioned earlier today, too, but I did want to just restate, Ms. Hampshire Cowan is ill this morning and is a member of the committee. And I am here sitting in as a member of the committee and in her stead because of her. But thank you for the presentation. I think that it's the distinctions that you made are important because it's the action that we're taking today is consistent with the agreement that is in place with the developer, and that we are have been requested to act on a flexibility that is within the agreement that was built into it. So that is the specific action that we are taking today that is before us to consider today.
That's correct.
The second thing is I think that it's important to recognize that in any transaction that we are enhancing the system, enhancing its flexibility, enhancing the performance of the system across the board. I think that it's important to highlight the key points that you raised about how the value and benefit to the system and the agency is. Those, interestingly, those are points that are with respect to the agreement, whether we take this action or not. The agreement was designed to create those kinds of outcomes. But I do think it's important for us to amplify as opportunities arise why these agreements are important to advance the interest system. And we have to be very aggressive about ensuring that we're doing that effectively always across the system. And I think that we're in a good place for it. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Is it appropriate to move the request at this point? I should hold off on that. May I offer a motion, or is that appropriate at this point?
You may. That's perfectly appropriate.
Okay. May I offer a motion to approve the request from the staff with respect to this agreement?
Sure. Mr. Nichols has moved to approve the amendment to the joint development agreement at the Greenbelt Metro Station. Is there a second? Mr. Dyke has seconded, and I'll open up for further discussion. So, Mr. Wall, I want to pause for a minute, still hit on with what was reported and many people read and has many people very concerned, and we can spend time talking about this. The headline is Metro to offer Greenbelt land to attract the FBI headquarters. So let me just restate my understanding. Metro already offered the land some years ago.
We offered the land to our developer for a joint development project at this
time. And it was first approved when?
I don't remember the original approval date, but it was last approved by the board in 2011.
It's at least 10 years ago, right?
Correct, yes.
Okay. So it was approved more than 10 years ago, is my understanding. The first amendment had to do with extending the time for which the developer could, the first offer approved by the board, the FBI wasn't discussed.
Correct.
It was approved for a mixed-use development.
Correct.
Okay. And so it was most recently extended just to give the developer more time.
Correct. In
okay.
October of 2011,
okay.
To give the developers.
And so Metro, in the proposal that you have before us now, is not a partner in the development.
Correct. Correct. We are the land owner, and we will convey the land to our developer.
Now, are you aware of any other metro sites anywhere in the in our compact area that are also being considered for this solicitation, the FBI response?
There are no other WMATA-owned properties that are being considered.
Has WMATA been asked by any jurisdictions for assistance in their proposals?
We have not.
And do you expect that any requests are going to come in between now and when this proposal will is due?
The RFI to GA is due on March 4th, and then we don't anticipate receiving any requests from our jurisdictional partners between now and then.
Yeah, but if we did, we would be in the position to act on them.
Absolutely.
Can you spend some time talking? Some months ago, the board considered an agreement with the GSA, whose purpose was to allow us to identify some of the region that would be ripe for a GSA tenant. Where are we in that process, and how does it locate the current discussion?
The board approved a memorandum of understanding with GSA in the spring of last year, 2012. Essentially, that agreement seeks to establish a framework through which Metro and GSA will work together to identify opportunities to locate future GSA facilities on Metro property with the goal of creating employment centers that are adjacent to transit and enabling kind of their employees to actually take advantage of transit. We have continued those discussions and with GSA in terms of looking at potential sites. We have not yet kind of advanced that forward, but that will be forthcoming in terms of as those discussions continue. This potential project at Greenbelt is in alignment with that MOU. It was done separately and in advance of the MOU with GSA, but it does pursue the same principles of establishing GSA employment centers on our metro property.
Okay. So I think those are my questions. I will say this, because certainly the District of Columbia, we've been happy to have the FBI in the District of Columbia, and we'll be happy to see them in the District of Columbia for years to come. Our economic development people are feverishly putting together a very competitive proposal. We aren't the deciders around this table about where the FBI will go, and we know that we'll all put those interested competitive proposals before the GSA. It's my understanding that ours doesn't involve a metro site, but we certainly have encouraged our economic development folks to be in close contact with Metro, and I am willing to commit if we need to call an additional meeting of this committee to make a recommendation to the board, I'd be willing to do that. Mr. Downey.
Quick question on the GSA.
I don't recall. I believe that it is part of transit access, correct?
Transit access, so we might be involved facilitating that access.
Correct.
Mr. Dye.
Just for the record, Madam Chair, since you noted that the district was preparing a proposal, Virginia is also looking at a proposal as well.
Ms. Hudgens, and then Mr. Bolger.
I would just say ditto to Mr. Dye.
Mr. Bolger.
I just wanted to clarify, Madam Chair, that when we got the Memorandum of Understanding cooked up or expedited with the then Commissioner of Buildings for GSA, Mr. Pack, which was a great step forward, immediately right afterwards, unfortunately, Bob Pack had to step down as the Commissioner of Buildings at the GSA. And the new acting commissioner at the acting administrator of GSA, Mr. Taglarini, has opened up the process to everyone rather than, go back to our original MOU. But I still think our MOU has some value. But the way that handles the procedure, it's a little different than originally when we did the MOU.
Well, I think that the MOU, and I think we can do some more things to make that MOU have a little more advantage for us, and that's help identify some sites in the region that we want to attract GSA tenants to. And I think that we have some work to do there. Mr. Nichols?
Just one last comment, and I agree with the comments that have been offered. It's a, in the context of not specifically this joint development agreement, but all of them, particularly as it relates to the federal government, I think that it's going to be an evolving process, we all know. And I think we appreciate GA's willingness to be aggressive about creating more opportunities to maximize the transit infrastructure. And it's going to challenge us to be aggressive and creative as well. I mean, historically, this agency has not been easy to deal with in joint development. And it's going to be even more important as we go forward to make sure that the assets that we have maximum flexibility, within reason, for the kinds of investment that we're trying to encourage right now. They are extraordinarily expensive to develop, and yet they have the potential to bring extraordinary return to the developers. Otherwise, they would not have an interest, even though they may like it. So to the extent that we present an additional process for getting there, we have to make sure that we are, while being responsible, that we also make sure that it's fluid enough, flexible enough, responsible enough to make these things happen as quickly as possible. And thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank
Excellent
you.
Job.
Sure.
Committee.
Sure. Let me just say this before I call for the vote. So should this amendment pass, I would summarize the board's action like this. The board amends joint development agreement to allow Prince George County the rights to develop the Greenbelt Metro Station. Would you agree that that is the action you're recommending?
It allows the developer the right to assign their agreement to Prince George's County.
Okay, so the board would, if should it pass, the board would allow the developer, the selected developer, to assign its rights to Prince George's County to develop the Greenbelt Metro Station.
Correct.
Okay.
Madam Chair,
yes.
Could we just insert in there, pursuant to a previously existing agreement?
Okay.
And only with respect to the FBI development.
Correct.
But should the FBI not go there, Prince George's County still have the rights to develop that parcel.
Correct. The current joint development agreement has been extended with the express purpose of pursuing FBI. If the decision should be made that another site is selected that's not Greenbelt, the joint development agreement ends completely. And the property reverts back to Metro, and we have it available to offer in some future solicitation.
Mr. Downey?
My understanding, only though that acreage for the FBI would be transferred. The developer is still a developer for all other aspects of the project.
Incorrect. As contemplated in this amendment, the developer will send their joint development agreement to Prince George's County, which comprises the entire 78-acre property.
So it's something different this morning.
Madam Chair.
Ms. Hines.
Can I just clarify? I mean, you said at the beginning, Mr. Walsh, that this agreement with this particular developer has been around for 10 years at least, right?
Correct.
And so part of what Metro is saying, we extended it for purposes of pursuing this opportunity, but we're saying, gee, these folks haven't delivered over all these many years, and if they don't deliver this time, Metro might be interested in starting over. Metro is interested in a new joint development.
We will start over.
Right. I mean, it's important to put that in the context of it was extended to pursue a particular opportunity, and they haven't been able to perform so far, so if they can't perform, we will start over.
Correct.
Okay, those I think those are all the comments. We have a motion. It's been seconded. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Are any members of the committee dissenting? Any abstaining? So the committee will report a unanimous recommendation to the board. Let me see. Do we have anything else? Is there any new business that you want to add something that you wanted to give a preview of the next meeting? Is that item five?
No, there's no new business.
Okay. So I have asked the staff to prepare for our next meeting an evaluation of the existing Metro station sites to hear from the staff what they think about the development potential at each of those sites. I also expect the staff to make a presentation about what they should focus on for the current year, and you'll be asked to vote on that. So if there's no further business before the committee, is 10:40, and we're adjourned.